I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
With the 10th pick in the 2022 NBA Draft, the Washington Wizards select Johnny Davis from the University of Wisconsin.
There is a new wizard in D.C. Welcome back, Grant and Danny, the day after the NBA draft day. Thanks so much for making the show part of your Friday. Right now, joining G&D on the hotline, Odyssey NBA insider Ryan McDonough. Insider calls are presented by Hey Maine, new podcast from Kenny Maine. Each week, Kenny talks to famous people from the world of sports, music, and all kinds of other stuff. Ryan, we appreciate the time. Thank you. Much appreciate a few minutes.
Hey, Grant and Danny, always great to be on with you guys.
Appreciate it, buddy. What'd you make of Johnny Davis at 10 last night for the Wiz?
Well, I guess the first thought I have is I'm glad he walked across the stage and shook the commissioner's hand rather than jetting to Taco Bell if he got hungry. But beyond that, that's a joke for those who haven't seen the commercial. Beyond that, I like his body. He's a strong-bodied wing. He's physical. He likes to initiate contact. I like how he draws fouls, gets to the free throw line. This is a very productive college player. For those your listeners who haven't seen him play, he was one of the best players in the country this year as a sophomore at Wisconsin after having a pretty underwhelming freshman year. He didn't start a game. He only averaged 7 points a game. So I thought it was a solid pick for Washington, but now that it's been made, I think more of the intrigue with the Wiz probably shifts toward free agency and specifically the situation with Bradley Beal.
Yeah, which we will get into. One other Davis question for me is, what type of three-point shooter will he become? Because there is some curiosity about that. There's some doubt about that. And I think that's how you could unlock him being maybe a 20-point-a-game type guy in the NBA ultimately.
I think that'll be the big question with Johnny Davis and what his ceiling is. Most of the evaluators around the league who I talked to and respect had him slotted around where the Wizards took him at 10. And the reason he wasn't maybe a little bit higher, given that he had a very productive year, averaged close to 20 points, 8-plus rebounds a game, a couple assists at Wisconsin, was the shooting. It improved, especially his free-throw shooting improved from year one to year two, and he's very good at getting to the free-throw line. But he only shot 29% this year from the college three-point line. If he can unlock that stroke, which, watching the way he shoots it, I don't have any reason to believe that he won't get significantly better as he gets more practice and reps and gets around NBA coaching, then he has a chance to be a pretty solid offensive player.
Ryan McDonough with us here on G&D, breaking down the draft and where the Wizards go from here. So, Ryan, I know everyone's telling me about positionless basketball, but in the next breath, they're like, we also need a point guard. So there's still some positions, right? What's he going to be at this next level? Is he a two? Is he a three with small ball? Is he an occasional offense initiator, maybe in some half-court sets? What do you think about Davis there?
Yeah, Davis measured about 6'6 in sneakers, about 200 pounds, got about 6'9 wingspan. So I think he slots in as a wing, a two or three. NBA teams, go a little bit smaller these days, so you can get away with playing maybe multiple smaller wings. Very few teams post mismatches and try to, dominate physically with their perimeter players posting up guys on the offensive end. So I think he could play alongside Bradley Beal. But to answer your question more directly, I think the Wizards have to add and will add a point guard over the next week or so, either in free agency or via trade. Johnny Davis is a nice player and a nice piece, but he just recently turned 20 years old. He's a young, two-year college player who's unproven. So I think if they re-signed Bradley Beal, which I anticipate they will. I think they'll go look at some veteran point guards. Keep an eye on guys like Tyus Jones and Ricky Rubio on the free agent market, maybe somebody else via trade, but I don't think they view, you know, Johnny Davis necessarily as the night one starter alongside Bradley Beal in the backcourt.
Odyssey NBA insider Ryan McDonough on Grant and Danny. We will come back to the Wizards. I want to get some thoughts about the top of the draft board. Otherwise, though, we were told by Woj and others, this is a done deal. Jabari Smith is one, Paolo Banchero's three. Everyone was kind of on the Thunder and Chet Holmgren. Didn't work out the way we thought. Banchero came off the board first, and Smith went third to the Rockets. Which of those big three that separated themselves do you think will be the best NBA player?
I think it's really close, and I understand why the betting markets were upended late. I think you can make a strong argument that Paolo Banchero will be the best player. Let me put it this way, guys. I think Banchero is the safest of the three. He has a higher floor, to use NBA terminology, I think, than the other guys, just because he's been one of the best players his entire life. Throughout high school and AAU, coming up the ranks, his body is ready-made, certainly more ready-made for the NBA than Chet Holmgren. He's built like an NBA power forward already at just 19 years old, but he's also skilled. He can dribble, pass, and shoot, so he has a chance to be a pretty complete offensive player. Now, Holmgren has more upside, I think, with the incredible length and shooting ability and shot-blocking ability, but that body is going to take some time, so I understand why Orlando did what they did. I think Banchero could end up, you know, being the best player of that trio. I guess I was a little confused, guys, but just from a process standpoint, though, as far as why were they so secretive. I saw some interviews with Banchero saying he didn't really interact much with Orlando. I don't think he visited the team in Orlando, so I don't really understand that. When you have the number one pick, you control the draft. I guess I'm a little confused as to why they were so secretive about their process.
That's a good point. You're not worried about
out. Yeah, exactly. No one's going to sneak out from underneath you and take the guy that you want.
Why would you even do that? That's crazy. You're right.
Ryan, I want to.
Yeah, and it's a big decision. You know, it's a big decision. So for me, you know, you want all the information possible. I'd want to maximize time with those guys. The way the NBA works in this process is you can have two visits. One can be for up to 48 hours, and then the second can be for up to 24 hours. So for them to apparently not use either one with a pick of this magnitude, I still think the kid's going to be a good player, and ultimately that's all that matters. But I'm scratching my head as far as why it was such a cloak and dagger thing, especially when they ended up keeping the pick. Like you said, they're number one. Nobody can get ahead of them in drafting. I think it would have made sense to bring in as many guys at the top of the draft as you can and spend as much time with them as possible to hopefully get to know everything about them.
So, Ryan, a couple years ago, the Kings passed on Luka Doncic, took Marvin Bagley, DeAndre Ayton went number one overall, but we think of that as the Luka Doncic draft, and you know that's the star from right up there that everybody kind of passed on. If somebody does something like that, if a guy that a few teams passed on turns into a stud, who is that guy and where is he now?
I think it's Jaden Ivey in this year's draft. I think those top three front court players who we just discussed, Banchero, Holmgren, Jabari Smith Jr., got most of the attention, but I wouldn't at all be surprised if we look back in 3 to 5 years and said Jaden Ivey was the best player to come out of the 2022 draft. There are some shades of Ja Morant. He's not the playmaker that Ja is, at least not yet, but the way he moves with the ball is at a different speed. In fact, I actually think he's probably more similar to a guy that you guys know very well. He used to play in your backyard, and that's John Wall before he was injured. You guys know how John in his prime just moved at a different speed than everybody else, and it was really tough for defenses to stay in front of him. I think Ivy has that kind of explosiveness with the ball. So I was a little surprised that Sacramento passed on him. They do have De'Aaron Fox in their backcourt along with Davion Mitchell, last year's lottery pick, but I think the Kings need talent. They took probably a better positional fit, at least if they don't make any other moves to the roster, in Keegan Murray, but I really love Detroit's draft. I think Ivy has a chance to be a superstar, and then I love that they were able to maneuver around a little bit and then add Jalen Duren, who I thought was the best center in the draft, in the trade. I think Detroit, to me, won draft night.
All right, so Ryan, you had referenced the point guard situation in Washington, some possible targets for the Wizards. Let's drill a little deeper down on those. I like the name Rubio that you brought up in free agency. You also mentioned the trade market. Give us some possibilities there, if you would.
Yeah, so I think the free agent market, you look at Rubio and you look at Tyus Jones, those two guys in particular. In fact, Tyus Jones is the name that I like the best, just because he was so productive. And if you look at what Memphis did last year when John Morant was out. I think John Morant missed 20-plus games for the Grizzlies, and they won like 85 or 90% of their games. It was remarkable how well the Grizz played without John Morant, and I think Tyus Jones was a big reason for that. So he's my top fit of the available point guards for the Wizards. He's unrestricted free agent. He's still relatively young, should be just approaching his prime. I don't think Washington wants to get involved, or I would not recommend them getting involved in the Kyrie Irving circus. We'll see what happens with Kyrie. But a couple of the guys on the trade market who I think are available are, ironically, either Charlotte Hornets or passed through Charlotte recently. Terry Rozier, we've heard that he's on the trade market. Talented scorer. The contract is fine. He makes $17 million this year and then starts in the low 20s next year and then goes up for three or four more years. So he's a young player, again, who should be approaching his prime. Good body, can score the ball. And then Devontae Graham, a guy who's out of favor in New Orleans. I like that one a little bit less. But I think there's a reason that the Pelicans may move on from him. Keep in mind that New Orleans brought in C.J. McCollum a year at the trade deadline, and it worked out very well in the short term. So I wouldn't at all be surprised. In fact, I would expect them to try to move Devontae Graham this offseason.
Nothing on Malcolm Brogdon. Have you heard that name at all?
Yeah, Brogdon for sure. Yeah, Brogdon is in play. I do think there's, I'm glad you brought that up. I think there's some friction and tension there that was started when the Pacers made the deal with Sacramento to bring in Tyrese Haliburton. Domantas Sabonis went out. Haliburton came in. Haliburton is, I think, the point guard of the future. I think he should be. I think, he's in play. The challenge with Malcolm and the question teams have, and this goes back to his draft, and you guys know him well watching him at Virginia, where he had a terrific career. There were certain teams who were scared off in the pre-draft process medically. He's had some injuries in the NBA, but generally has held up relatively well. So I think a lot of the calculation is teams evaluate Brogdon is not his productivity. He has been productive. He's tough. He's smart. He's a good basketball player. Is he going to hold up? He's got three more years left on his contract in that $22, $23 million range. Is he going to be sound medically? If you think he is, I think he'd be an excellent fit for the Wizards because of his size, toughness, and playmaking ability.
Ryan, you've been a GM. You're the GM of the Suns. You've been a high-ranking official in the East, Boston, among other organizations. If you were running the Wizards this offseason, you were Tommy Shepard, and you had the autonomy to do whatever you wanted. You talked to Ted Leonsis, and he said, hey, roster's yours. I'll say yes, you do it. What would you do with Beal?
I think you have to re-sign him. I think you have to. It's for those who don't know, Washington's the only team that can re-sign Beal. I'm fairly certain he's going to opt out, guys, and because it doesn't make business sense for him to do anything. Whether he re-signs in Washington or leaves, it makes good business sense for Bradley Beal to opt out. So here's some of the numbers. Let me just pull it up on my screen real quick. His player options for about $36.5 million, but if he opts out, which, again, I think he will, he can make a lot more than that in the first year of a new deal. He can make close to $43 million. So I think, the challenge for Washington is, can you get him anything, less than the max? They keep in mind, Washington's the only team that can give him a five-year deal. Now, that five-year max number is a lot. I mean, it's projected to be a five-year deal in the $250 million range. But, however, now that being said, if Washington, who knows more about Bradley's medical than anybody, thinks he's going to be medically sound, I would give him that deal because, keep in mind, the collective bargaining agreement is coming up, and most of the people around the league, myself included, think the salary cap is going to skyrocket when the new TV deals kick in. So, $55 million 4 or 5 years from now is a lot of money for Bradley Beal, but keep in mind, it's all relative, and I think the cap will continue to go up, and if Bradley stays healthy and productive, that should be a fine contract.
But it sounds to me like you're signing him to keep him, right? Because signing him is almost a no-brainer now, because otherwise you're letting him walk. I guess the question I'm wondering is, as a GM, would you try to trade him, or are you signing him to be here as your top guy?
Yeah, I think they're going to sign him and try to make it work alongside Bradley. We can debate whether that's the right call or not. The team has, tried to rebuild on the fly, so to speak, without really bottoming out. They have been, in the lottery recently, or picking, in the late lottery, early teens, in that range there. They've added some young talent. We'll see how Rui Hachimura and Denny Advia and now Johnny Davis pan out. But they haven't shown a willingness to full-blown rebuild and hit the bottom, which I understand. So I think in the short term, they can and will try to build around Beal and win. Keep in mind, guys, if he's on a 4 or 5 year contract, even at the max level, if he's healthy and if he plays relatively well, there'll be a market for him. So I would would try to put a winning team together around Beal, maybe incrementally improve the team. And then if you're not able to do that, you can always look at trades for Beal starting next offseason, or if he's on a multi-year deal, you have years to figure that out.
What would work, Ryan? And I guess what I mean is I kind of feel like I've seen what it looks like when Bradley Beal's your best player. He's a good player. Don't get me wrong. I'm not running him down, but it usually looks like 35 wins and, you know, maybe you're scratching and clawing for the play-in game with a bunch of veterans. What kind of thing would work systemically? I don't know that it's Kristaps Porzingis and, you know, a veteran point guard on the market of who's available at this point. What sort of design would you try to do around Beal?
Well, the addition of Porzingis is one of the reasons I think Washington will continue to be aggressive and try to win as many games as possible. You're paying Kristaps at a max level, and you know, if he's healthy, certainly he's one of the more talented big men in the league with his shooting and shot blocking ability. So I think the path with Beal, or the thought with Beal, is if you re-sign him, you have a full offseason in training camp now with Porzingis and Beal together, you add a point guard, and then you try to develop. You do everything you can to develop those talented young players, Johnny Davis, Advia Hachimura, those three in particular, Corey Kispert, and then hope one or two of them are keepers, or ideally, if one of those guys breaks out and shows a lot of value, either you keep him and he's the quote-unquote third star, or the centerpiece of a trade package to bring you a more ready-made veteran to play alongside Beal and Porzingis.
We love having you on. Always learn from you. Thank you for the time, Ryan. We really appreciate it.
Anytime, guys.
Thanks,
always
Ryan.
Great to be on with you.
Good to dive deep into the draft class after last night, get some insight on the Wizards coming out of them making a critical pick here on Grant and Danny. Odyssey NBA Insider, Ryan McDonough, Insider Calls, presented by Hey Maine. Let's do this next. What is your level of Wizards interest right now? What is your level of Wizards fandom? Anecdotally, it seems to us like the Wizards are the number four team in D.C. behind even the Capitals now. Is that the case, though? I'm not sure. I think sometimes we assume the reality is what is around you, right? Like you see that in politics all the time. People think that what they think or their neighbors think or their neighborhood or the city they live in. The country's pretty big, man. There's people that think all kinds of different ways all over the place. You just might not interact with them. I wonder if we're right when we say that the interest in the Wizards has waned so much, or that people, by and large, don't care like they once did. It feels that way, but is that true? How do we best tap into that, and how do we assess that now?
Yeah, how do we quantify it? I mean, you can look at some of the data, whether it's attendance, TV ratings, or otherwise, but it just sort of...
Attendance was bad last year.
It certainly was. Lowest in percentage in the NBA, I think 24th in overall number. And you wonder how much is that as people going to watch their favorite team from somewhere else. You know, not quite Susan O'Malley days, but just sort of that level of interest. It's hard to quantify, but just sort of think outside of you, because no one's insulting you, Wizards fan. You got one here. I'm sitting right here. I care a lot, but I recognize that I'm kind of alone. We just sort of feel the energy here sitting in this studio when we do a Wizards topic, even a big picture thing. It just doesn't feel like there's that much interest in the club. And I think at one point they were third. I think they've been superseded now by the Capitals, especially after 2018.
I would agree with that. Here's the metric that I'm hoping to put together. This is what I've come up with. You tell me if you think this makes sense. So it's complicated. There's a lot of numbers, but I'm going to try to make it succinct. I want a 1 to 10 ranking of how much you care about the Wizards, and I want it based in 2002, 2012, and now. You get what I'm going
for?
Yes,
I do.
So 1 to 10, how much did you care about the Wizards in 2002? For me, it was a 10. I was not only watching every game, but I was playing and pretending to be dudes in the backyard, whatever else, right? 2012, how much did you care about the Wizards? I'd have to look up that specific season, but it probably would have been like a 7. That's like a Mecca Okafor Wizards, right? That's like...
I love that. That's what we're defining the era. A 20-win team in 2012.
Now, I would say I'm like a 4 at this point. Mm. But that's what I'm wondering is, what about you? 02, 12, and now.
I mean, 2002 is a 10 at its height. Probably 2012, 8 or 9. Now it is Reggie Wayne. I struggle to maintain that same level of interest. I'll say a 5, but that may be generous.
My point is, though, maybe we, because we have waned, feel like everyone has. And because of what we experience, whether that's call volume or interest, or you go to less games, you know, you used to go to 3 or 4 games a year and you don't anymore. And same thing for me, right? I wonder, though, if that's the actual pulse or that's the real is that the reality, or is that just kind of what we're experiencing and we're influencing ourselves? But let's open up the phones next. 800-636-1067. The draft was last night. Compare your fandom now to 20 years ago and 10 years ago. And bigger picture, is that fixable for the Wizards if you have seen your passion subside? We're Grant and Danny, taking out the shovel, digging in on basketball in D.C. next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.